MacCast, Wednesday, February 1st, 2012, Macworld iWorld 2012 coverage, part 2. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to my continuing coverage of Macworld iWorld 2012. I hope you've been enjoying the interviews so far. I have another 8 or so for you from around the show floor. And, you know, I just want to comment, I don't think I mentioned last time, Macworld was kind of re-envisioned this year. And for anybody who's been in the past or anybody who's considering going and maybe hasn't yet, I would encourage you to come out because it's such a fun time. Since I started going to these several years ago, it's great to get together as a community face-to-face and just hang out with other Mac geeks and folks. And I think with the re-envisioning of the show, you know, Apple left a few years back and it kind of, everybody was wondering what's going to happen to Macworld. Is it going to go on? Can it survive without Apple? And I think if anything, this year proved that IDG and Paul Kent and the folks at Macworld have really taken to heart this idea that the Mac is built around a community and that we all like to do different things with our devices, not just Mac devices, you know, not just the desktops and the notebooks, but now iOS devices and iPhones, and really they've started to encompass all aspects of it and a lot of the creative aspects. There were a lot of events going on surrounding music, if that's what you were into, or photography or videography or art, along with all of the technical discussions that happened. So I've read some things and heard some things of some people complaining that it's not so corporate or training focused within specific tracks, but I think that's ultimately a good thing. I think it becomes more like the ultimate, and these are my words, so hopefully they don't mind me saying this, but to me, it seemed like the ultimate sort of user group conference where we can all get together, we can all hang out in one place, swap stories, ideas, show the things that we're creating, whether you're a developer creating software and apps or you're hardware person creating accessories, you have those to show off. And then there's just all the users of these products. And it's everybody getting together. And it's this great mixing and mingling and exchange of ideas. I really had a good time at this year's show. And I'm really liking the direction it's going in. There were some small growing pains, some things that I think need to change a little bit. But by and large, I sat around looking at this conference going, wow, this is a really different format. But overall, they've done an excellent job. And if you're considering going in the future, I'd love to see you out there. I know a bunch of you came and came up and said hi to me at the show, and I really, really enjoyed that, being able to take a few moments from doing these interviews and just chatting with you and getting to know you a little bit better. And that's what really this is all about to me. It's what the MacCast is about. It's what shows like Macworld should be about. And it's what being a Mac geek and a Mac user really means. So thank you for listening to the show, for supporting what we're doing, and whether you're doing it online or in person, it's just awesome. So we're going to keep building this thing, and I think that's where the true success of Apple and the products come from. But let's get into some more of the interviews, because I had a great time sort of running around the show floor trying to find those little gems and trying to bring them to you in these interviews. So here we go. Here's my second day of Macworld iWorld 2012 coverage.
All right, so I've hit the show floor at Macworld again, and I'm over here at the Tourist Kiosk, and that's T-O-U-R-W-R-I-S-T. And I'll let Charles tell you a little bit about what Tourist is, and it's going to make sense why the wrist is in there with Tour.
Tourist lets you travel remotely, and when you use an iDevice, as you point it in different directions, you basically get a movable window to those worlds. So you're touring with your wrist, and you're traveling, hence the name.
Yeah, so it's a 3D panorama hosting service, and you now have some applications and stuff that you're announcing here at Macworld, right?
That's right. So our application lets you view anywhere. It's already the most popular virtual tour viewing app in the App Store. But what we're introducing today is the ability for people to shoot their own as well.
So I can take my iPhone. I can, with your software that you're releasing, and is it out yet?
We expect it to be approved today. We submitted over a week ago, and they're reviewing it right now.
Right. So probably by the time you hear this, the app will be in the App Store. You can download it for your iPhone, your iPod Touch. and you can use it to create a panorama image that you can then host through the tourist service.
That's right. So there are a number of panoramic photography apps out there, and we like a lot of them. And there are a number of those companies that are beginning to introduce tourist publishing into their platforms because into their products, because tourist is more than a product, it's a platform. We're working with a lot of different panoramic photography companies to be able to allow their users to publish, embed in websites, be visible on iDevices, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, traffic reports, what have you. What we are introducing today is the ability for you to not have to leave our environment to also participate in the content creation side of that.
All right, so if this makes sense, so you've been doing the hosting thing, which is a lot of people, like you were saying, you have different applications. Maybe you use Photoshop or some other app to create panoramas, either 360 or, you know, the cylindricals or what. And then you have a centralized service. You explained it, I think, aptly, like YouTube for panoramas, right?
That's exactly right. I mean, we've based a lot of our infrastructure around what worked well with YouTube. With YouTube, when you upload, it just works everywhere. And people don't have to view your YouTube videos on YouTube or through the YouTube app. They can drop a YouTube video on a web page, and it just works. And you can view how many times people have come into contact with your video. Same thing with your tours. You get standardized reports that show you collectively how many times they've been viewed. People can love them, and then whether or not you're viewing that through an app or a website or a web page or a microsite or whatever, you can see how many other people have loved it, that sort of thing.
And so a big key to that is being able to, whatever my favorite tool is, to publish into your platform. And it sounds like you have a lot of apps that support that.
We have a publishing API that we released a few months back, and we already have a dozen companies that are currently right now building it into their products.
Okay, great. So now tell me how I do this. You know, how do I get an account? How much does it cost? All those sorts of things.
People don't like to believe this, but it's true. It's literally 100% free. You cannot pay to use this platform. In fact, the only service that we offer at all is for companies that want to rebrand our app. That's totally unrelated to what we're discussing today. So you can go and register at tourist.com. That's tourwrist.com. And then once you have an account, you can download the app and start creating tours and uploading them and viewing other people's, and that's it.
And then if you need a panorama app, you were showing me your new panorama creation tool. It's really simple and easy, and then it goes right into your system all for free.
That's right. You take 10 pictures by turning in a circle, you give it a name, and you hit upload. I mean, it really couldn't be any easier than that.
Well, very cool. Cool technology, and people should go check it out. Thank you, Charles, for chatting with us.
Thanks very much.
All right. One of the things I love about Macworld is coming and finding really unique products that end up being great solutions for certain situations. And I had that happen when I walked by the Eyeballs booth and I ran into Derek, and he was showing me his product that he came up with. I guess probably the first thing is, let's try our best to describe what Eyeballs is and how you kind of came up with it.
Sure, of course. Well, Eyeballs essentially is four foam balls that fit on the corners of your tablet. They look a little goofy, but if you actually see what they can do, it's pretty awesome. They're basically drop protection for your tablet, but they also serve a few other functions, which, if you get a chance to check us out, you'll see.
Yeah, and so we were talking, you came up with this like the day the iPad was announced. So I'm assuming you're a Mac Apple fan like I am and my audience is, and you saw the announcement and you thought, what?
Yeah, well, I was on the ski lift with Lee, my business partner, and we were on the ski lift, and we had seen the day the iPad was announced. I was literally on my phone going up the ski lift, and I seen the announcement of the iPad, and I said to myself, wow, I'm going to need an iPad, whether it's for music or whatever, I'm going to need one. But I also know myself, and I know that I break things. I break my phone, I break stuff drops, things happen, and I said, you know, I'm going to need to protect that. At that time, we started going down the hill, and Lee, my partner, he's not gonna agree with this, but he wiped out, and he gets up, and he's like, man, I need to wear a helmet. And that's when, I don't know what it was, the iPad was on my mind, and I just pictured four helmets on the corners of an iPad, and I went home that night, I went to Toys R Us, I bought every toy ball I could find in the universe, I had hundreds of them, and I started creating the prototype, which eventually became the eyeballs. There was a lot of work that went into it after that, but this is what we came to, and now we got the eyeballs. It's absolute ultimate drop protection for your iPad. We call it the original universal tablet stabilizing and shock absorbing harness, and there's nothing like it on Earth.
Yeah, there is nothing like it, and you're right, it looks a little bit unusual, but I'm sitting here at the booth. You've got one rolling around in a cage. It's actually on a Kindle, so it's universal.
This is a Mac show, so we figure we'd give some work into the Kindle, you know.
But it's working, and I've watched you several times, and the people here at the booth drop iPads literally on the floor, and this is concrete. Yeah, this is, you know, it's got a rug over it, but it's not going to protect, and the iPad comes out unscathed. So, you know, in certain applications, and you have a great poster. You said you've been very successful in education. So Apple just made their education announcement.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is a perfect environment. And my wife said to me, schools aren't going to want those because they're going to break, right?
Yeah. No, they're not going to break if you strap eyeballs on them. Before that announcement, we were already in 100 school districts, and we're really proud of that because we've been following that whole market from the beginning. And now we feel that after this announcement, we feel it's great for the kids, great for the parents, great for education, great for everybody, and great for us because we feel we're going to sell a lot of eyeballs to this market. And we already have. We've been great, really successful with it. We plan to expand on that. We offer substantial discounts to educators, up to 25% off of our retail for any educator, and that's no minimums on that. So we're really proud of what we're offering these educators, and we hope to expand it from there.
Yeah, another thing that really impressed me about it is it's very simple, but it's also very versatile because I'm noticing you have here, you know, pulling an eyeball off one corner and using it as a keyboard stand.
Yep.
You have one that's actually hanging on a hook. It almost becomes like a wall-mounted application.
Yeah, you can hang it from the wall. You can hang on to it. They're actually really great for gaming. The ball in general, I mean, aside from being the most absorbent shape on Earth, it actually feels good in your hand. It's great to hold on to for gaming. It's really great for typing. Gives you ergonomic typing support. And it actually, you know, these tablets are slippery and they slide out of your hands. The eyeballs give you something of substance to hold on to, and you're not covering your tablet with an ugly case with a Hello Kitty on it. I mean, it's really simple.
And they're lightweight, slide on and off easily. So I'm looking at it going, I have kids, you know, people come over to my house with their kids and they're like, want to play with my iPad, and I'm very generous about it, but I am always worried they're going to drop it. So I could just pull these out, slip them on, and go.
Well, I designed them with this bungee cord, universal cord, so that they're really easy to slide off and put back on. And we really wanted to make something where you might not want eyeballs in the office or at the business meeting, but when you're at home, you want to throw it on the coffee table. You got a 7-year-old coming over to play Angry Birds. You're going to be working in the garage or in the garden. These are the applications where eyeballs really work, and we're seeing tablets being more and more put into these positions. You know, I use it. I have a nail on the wall in my garage, and I want to listen to music and watch Hulu while I'm in the garage. I hang it on the wall, and I don't worry about it. Cement floor, grease on the floor, I don't have to worry about it. I got eyeballs to protect me.
Well, very cool and innovative product. Why don't you tell everybody a price point, where they can get them, and where they can actually see, you know, what they look like and stuff.
Yeah. Okay, well, if you want to go to our website, it's eyeballs.info or eyeballsforipad.com. We're all over YouTube. There's tons of videos and reviews out there. Our price point is $19.95. We feel for $19.95, you're getting the ultimate protection. We're going to protect you better than a majority of these cases out here, and we're definitely more unique than all these, and you're still usable. And at $20, we feel we got a really great product. We also have the cases that work with the eyeballs. They're various prices between $20 and $30, and they're also pretty unique themselves. So check us out online, www.eyeballsforipad.com, and we're also available on Amazon or eBay and all these other places. So give us a look.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. I'm now with David at Adonit, and you guys have one of the most buzzing booths at the show, I think. You're kind of over here on the side, but man, it's kind of hard to get in there. Earlier today, it was slammed. It's later in the day. It's kind of calmed down a little bit, but still really, really busy. And it's because you guys have some really unique and interesting products, and one that also I'm going to talk to someone else about that's generating some good buzz. So let's talk about currently you guys do a couple of different styluses, but your stylus is different than some of the other rubber tip styluses we've seen. So can you talk about what you're doing that's a little bit different?
Yeah. So our stylus is the Jot family. We have the Jot Pro, the Jot Classic, and the Jot Mini. The difference with ours is the precision. What everything comes down to with ours is the precision. We use a clear tip, precision disc that's capacitive, so much the same way that you would use your finger or some of the other, you know, squish or foam tip stylus. Ours is the same, but because it's clear, you're able to see right down to the point. We also take that a step further with our Jot family of products, and we partner with apps with a program we have called Jot Ready, which is we offer our SDK for free because we want them to implement it into their apps. We work with a number of different apps right now. We have about 15. We work with Clive, Procreate, ArtRage, a bunch of different ones. And what that does is they implement the SDK, and it centers the point of the stylus. A lot of touchscreens are actually 5-6 pixels off to the side, so this goes ahead and it centers it. So.
And I got a chance to play around with that. I actually bought a mini because one of the challenges I've always had when using the art application is exactly what you're talking about. That rubberized tip or the foam tip kind of covers up your drawing point, and it's hard to get really, really precise. Another thing that I really liked about your tip is that it's kind of on a little ball joint, so you can use it at any angle, right?
Right. It gives you 40 degrees of angle. The idea with this especially is that the stylus should have good weight in your hand. It should feel like a ballpoint pen. You should be able to write at any angle that you would with a pen. It should give you the same experience. It should flow well. And again, because it's precise, it's the same experience you get with using your pen, whether it's doing signatures, drawings, you know, marking things up. We want you to have the same experience. It should be flawless.
And it absolutely was. That's why I was sold. I was like, I got to have one. So let's talk about then, you have three different models. What are the slight differences between the three and then pricing?
Okay, so the one that we just introduced here is Jot Mini. It's a little bit smaller, not only in diameter, but in length. And it also has a machined out clip, so you can clip to your pocket or that kind of thing. The next one up would be our Jot Classic, which is a little bit larger. They all have the same precision tip. And then Jot Pro. Jot Pro is different in that it has a couple extra features. It has the rubber grip that really adds for comfort, obviously for grip when you're doing drawing and those kind of things. It also has magnets inside it. We call magnetic cling. So with the iPad 2, your MacBook Pros, it works with the magnets in there and it attaches to the keyboard. So for the Pro is $29.99, for the Classic's $19.99, and the Mini is $21.99.
And there, I should also mention, they just gorgeous design, aluminum shafts. Very, the weight, like you mentioned, is very nice on all of the products. You don't just do styluses, though. You also have some pretty unique keyboard cases. Can you talk about those?
Yeah, we actually are bringing out now and introducing our Writer 2 Plus. The current versions for the iPad 2 are also developing it for the iPad 1 and obviously the new iPad 3. It's the second generation of our Writer. Our first generation, you know, as the company that we are, we're very brand conscious. We're also very community conscious. We listen to our consumers. And we took the feedback. And some of the feedback we got was we'd like a little more spacing in the keys. Our first version had batteries, these AAAs. This one now has a rechargeable mini USB. What we also added to that is we took and we made our keyboard case removable. Because it's Bluetooth, it means, you know, you could set your iPad up using our case, you could set it on your lap, you can do a lot of things with it, or you could essentially use it as a Bluetooth keyboard with your phone or with other devices. On top of that, we've added color. We have the red, we have the turquoise, we also have our black and tan and our black and gray. So, you know, much like the iPad that's very design centered, we wanted this to be minimal in design, but also accentuate the great design of the iPad. People get these products because of the design. They love the look, the feel, and obviously everything they do. We wanted this to be something that adds to that, not takes away from it.
Yeah, the colors are great and gorgeous, so people should probably check those out on the website. And I really did like the removability of the Bluetooth keyboard. It slides out, it's super thin and just really nice.
Very minimal, and that's the idea. We don't want to take anything away from your iPad. We want it to be comfortable for you to travel with. And, you know, as the tablets grow, you know, we're hoping people to use them more for productivity and can kind of leave that laptop at home. But this also, when you're ready to, you know, use it as your iPad again, it pops right out. So it works out fantastic.
And so what was battery life on the, you mentioned it's rechargeable, so what's the battery life on the keyboard?
Current battery life is 12 hours of constant use. So, you know, it takes quite a bit to run it out, basically. So it has more battery life than your iPad has. So your iPad's going to go down before it does.
Last quite long. Okay, well, we're going to go talk about the new Jot product here in a second, but thanks, David, for telling us about it. Yeah, that's the Jot Touch.
Thanks, man.
So now I brought Zach over. He's the designer of this really cool stuff. And I mentioned, we were talking about the Jot styluses, but you guys have kind of something that I mentioned, the buzz at the booth. And I think a lot of it is over this product, the Jot Touch. And you guys are bringing something that I think a lot of people wanted to bring to a stylus on the iPad, and that is pressure sensitivity, right?
Pressure sensitivity and button control, and we got other things in the works as well. I think most of the excitement wasn't necessarily about Jot Touch. It was about the fact that people could write with a pen again. And Jot Touch allows you to do that, and also takes you to the next level, which gives you like pressure sensitivity on the iPad where it's not currently available. In fact, no one offers it.
All right, so fair enough. I was probably putting my own bias on it because I'm super excited about Jot Touch because no one's done pressure sensitivity, and I was pulled in. I already mentioned I bought a Jot Mini because it's the stylus I was looking for, and I had not experienced the product.
Good cause. Good cause.
Funding developers, yeah. I guess talk a little bit about that. So how did the products come about?
Well, we just look at what's, I mean, like, for example, with the stylus. I mean, we were looking at everything that was on the market, and it was all these rubber nubs. And our first impression was, well, this isn't a pencil or a pen. What is it? It's basically just your finger, and you've already got 10 of those, so why do you need another one? And so we set about looking at how a capacitive screen worked and how we could make it work as close as we could to a pen without having you to add on a bunch of stuff or buy more equipment or change your software or anything like that. And so we came up with our current line of products, and people like them. They work well. You don't have to upgrade anything or change a dang thing that you're doing.
So let's talk about some of the technology that's in Jot Touch. I mean, you're thinking of a stylus. I'm looking at it going, this thing's super small. There's no pressure sensitivity on the screen on the iPad. So how do you pull something like this off? What's the technology in there that enables all this?
Well, we had to transfer data back to the iPad so we can communicate how hard we're pressing on it. So we had to, we're using some Bluetooth protocols that Apple has already set up that are completely open. And using this kind of data transfer back to the iPad, we can do a lot of things. One is pressure sensitivity. Another is controlling different things in the application with the buttons that are also on the pen. And a third thing is making palm rejection a lot more robust. If you're using palm if you want palm rejection, you've got to give more information to the screen than it's currently, and Apple currently allows you to have. And by using Jot Touch, as it's communicating what kind of pressure and the time that it gets that pressure, you can sync that up with a couple more sets of data and basically help the iPad distinguish what is a pen and what isn't. And
so you have Bluetooth, you have a battery, the pressure sensitivity is in the pen. I'm assuming there's a software component to this too, and that's implemented as well.
So yes, we're developing the SDK in-house that integrates with our pen, entire protocol and everything. And we're giving this free to developers if they want to integrate our pen. We're already working with 15 of them right now. We're working with a three up in front. Two off the top of my head are Procreate and Clibe. And they're implementing our SDK for prototyping purposes. We'll be sending out prototypes to these other guys or maybe mid next month, and that's when you'll start see probably some, you know, maybe they'll be showing some update like, oh, we've got Jot Touch implemented. We wouldn't have released it yet, but it'd be in the software. And at that point, they can literally do anything they want with that data. They can change it so the opacity changes. They can take it so the brush size is different. They can change it so the dynamics of how it's worked, you know, your speed plus your pressure, change how the brush looks.
I know a big question a lot of artists are going to have, and inevitably comes up when you start talking about pressure-sensitive tablets, is levels of sensitivity, and we were talking about it a little bit. Can you speak to that?
That's about 200 levels right now. It's more than than anyone we've pulled so far has been able to distinguish. Wacom sells their things using 2,000 levels of pressure, but giving the erratic nature of pressure sensitivity at that level and the fact that you can barely hold your hand still enough to do that, 200 has been more than adequate for what we've had to do. And I think you'll find that it's just easy to use, and it just works just fine.
Yeah, I tried it out. It works great. And you know, I'll point out that right now the iPad has zero levels of pressure.
Pressure, yes. And when Bluetooth 4.0 comes out later down the year, and you know, Apple implements it into their iPad 3 or whatever, then this pen will still work with iPad 3, no problem. But when we go to iPad 4, Bluetooth 4, not only saving power, but we'll be able to implement more levels of pressure if it's needed. We'll see.
That's a great product. I already mentioned I'm very excited about it. Are you talking about availability at this point at all?
It'll be available. It should be available around March time.
And I can't speak any more than that. It's under $100, and it'll be around, you know, in March.
And so if people want to keep up with it and figure out when it's coming out and get more information on not just that, but also all your other great products that we talked about, where should they go? What should they do?
They can visit www.donit.net, A-D-O-N-I-T.net, and that's where all our latest updates are. They can follow our Facebook page. They can follow Twitter that we push out every now and then, and or any media posts or any blogs or anything.
Right, you're all over the place. Well, you know, they heard you about you on the MacCast now. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. Really great products.
Thanks.
All right. A booth you almost always have to stop by at Macworld is OWC, and I'm here with Alan from OWC, and we're going to talk about some of their products. You guys have been making products and servicing the Mac community for years, right?
Yeah, officially from 1988.
Right. I'm a big fan of your hard drives, your hard drive enclosures, your memory. I order a ton of stuff from OWC. But let's talk about some of your new products that you're exhibiting here at Macworld. I guess maybe start with something that a lot of people, I think we were seeing some of it last year, but a lot of people were very excited about the wall adapters for USB charging. And you guys have finally started shipping those and are selling them. And tell people about the product and how it's going.
Sure. Yeah, we had it originally announced last year. It took a year to get UL certification, or the first one to have it. It's a two USB-powered hub ports and two working AC outlets. Fits in a standard box as long as it's 16 cubic inches. You just rewire it. It's nothing special. Make sure you turn off your circuit breaker. And it's strong enough to charge an iPad. And we're shipping them for about a month now, and they start $27. Right now we do have a show special. If you follow the links, you can get them for, I think, $23 a piece if you buy two or more.
Right. And you guys, one thing I saw when you guys started selling those is a great thing. A lot of people are going to get them and want to do the whole house. They're going to be like, I want USB ports on every wall outlet. So you guys are actually doing packages where I can order kind of bulk order, right?
Yeah, 5, 10, whatever, packs of 20. We got it all listed on there. You can buy them in bulk, absolutely.
Right. And you mentioned the installation, you know, because I was worried about, you know, how technical is it to install these things? And, you know, obviously, if you don't know what you're doing or aren't comfortable, you should use a certified electrician. But you guys have always, something that I've appreciated, put videos and stuff on your website. So you have some pretty good information on actually how to do it if you wanted to do it yourself, right?
That is absolutely correct. We've got a video. And my personal preference, I don't mess around with electricity, but I do have definitely plenty of friends who are certified electricians, but based on our video and what you can see, even take a look at, turn the circuit breaker off, test, make sure it's off, it's three wires, screw it on and put it back in, and it's that easy. It's nothing technical.
Right. So the other hot thing that everybody's getting into is solid-state drives, SSD. And you guys have a number of unique SSD solutions. It sounds like you have some new products that have just come out. Can you talk about those?
Yeah, we've got a brand-new 486G SSD for MacBook Airs. We've got our new Enterprise line of SSDs that are going to be 7-year warranty, longest in the industry. And they come with Enterprise-level flash, high level of IOPS and write cycles, and we have Paratus power technology that we developed that if there's an unexpected power failure or interruption, it'll finish writing the last signal it received, so you don't lose as much data as you would in a normal power outage. These are for raids, these are for corporate, high-end, mission-critical stuff.
Yeah, and you guys really cover the whole spectrum. And I see here, I'm looking over another thing in technology you've had for a long time is the data doubler. Can you talk a little bit about what that is? Because I think that's kind of a unique solution.
Yeah, the data doubler is simply a bracket that we designed to fit in the area that is normally taken up by an optical drive in a unibody MacBook Pro or MacBook. And what you can do is buy any other hard drive, 2.5-inch laptop or an SSD, and remove your optical drive. Again, we have videos on this. Install your drive onto the data doubler, install that into the optical bay, and then you have two working drives inside your laptop, and they show up as two separate drives on your desktop.
Yeah, so what a lot of people like to do, SSDs are, you know, obviously more pricey on a per gigabyte basis. They're smaller in size, so get that good boot up speed, get an SSD in there, but then move your big storage hard drive to the data doubler.
Yeah, that's what I recommend actually to a lot of my professional guys. I work with a lot of high-end photographers and videographers, even in their Mac Pros. I tell them to get anything from a 60 to a 240, put their applications, their iOS, their OS system on there, and anything that they want to access really quick. And then the standard drives are for deep storage, libraries, you know, iPhoto, stuff like that.
Right. And the other big area, OWC, well, memory, I mean, you guys do all kinds of stuff, but a lot of external hard drive enclosures and things like that. One thing my audience has asked about, everybody wants to know about Thunderbolt. So can you just give us a status update on where OWC is with Thunderbolt products?
Yeah, we've got it in development right now. It is very slow going. It was an evolving technology. But we are going to be fitting all of our cases with Thunderbolt eventually, and we are working on it.
Right. So I think people should just watch your website probably for the next few months.
Yep, which is a great idea.
All right. And so if people do, because you have a wide range of products, obviously we can't go to the price of everything, where should people go to check it all out, get more information, see the full lineup of everything that OWC carries?
MacSales.com.
All right, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, you guys asked for Thunderbolt, and I'm going to get you some more Thunderbolt. Not too much of it here on the show floor that I've run across, but one of the companies that is doing a new product is Western Digital, and I'm here with Julie. And why don't you tell us a little bit about the Thunderbolt product that you have here today?
Okay, great. We'd be glad to. This is our newest, our first Thunderbolt product. It's called MyBook Thunderbolt Duo. Inside, it houses 2 3.5-inch drives. We're offering up to 4 and 6 terabyte capacity. On the back, it'll have 2 Thunderbolt ports. This allows you to daisy chain up to 6 Thunderbolt storage devices and essentially allowing you to maximize your performance using the Thunderbolt interface. With the 4 devices that we have daisy chained here into RAID 0, we're seeing writes of over 660 megabytes and reads of over 770, almost 800 megabytes per second.
Right, and you were running through, you have the Blackmagic Design speed test, which a lot of people use for testing this performance, and I'm watching these meters, and it's unbelievable the kind of throughput you're getting. But that's, when you've rated them together in this configuration. If I just have one drive, talk a little bit about the performance on that end.
Yeah, definitely. One drive will get you on average 250 megabytes per second in RAID 0. In RAID 1, it'll be slightly less than that.
Right. And you said another factor in this is you've noticed hardware is a little bit of a factor in terms of the raw speed performance?
Definitely. We've seen a difference in operating system, lower versions of operating system versus the latest and greatest, and as well as faster performing hardware.
Right. So there's a lot of factors that go into this beyond just the Thunderbolt. But, I mean, these are still amazing, amazing numbers in terms of speed. And the ability to daisy chain them together is going to be great for people who need to add on and expand performance as their needs grow. So what is availability on the product and what's cost if you have that available?
Okay. Availability is shipping this quarter in U.S., and cost has not been released yet because this has not been an officially released product. We're just demonstrating here today.
Okay, so beyond demonstrating here today, if people wanted to get more information on the product, do you have a website available yet, or is that still pending?
Yeah, no information outside of what we're doing here today.
Okay, well, I might have to take some pictures and post them up there so you guys can see they exist. But they are coming. That's the point, is Thunderbolt is coming. Companies like Western Digital are going to have products available for us, so hang in there, and you're going to be blown away when you see it. So thank you, Julie, for showing us the product.
Sure, no problem. Thank you.
All right, so I've jumped over to the Blue Microphone booth, and I'm here with Ben. I think we actually talked last year about your products. I always love coming by here because you guys are doing amazing things, especially this year with some of your iPad iOS products. So let's talk a little bit about the first one, the Spark.
Yeah, good to see you, Adam, again. We're here at the Macworld show, and we've got 3 new products, including the Spark Digital, which has won a couple awards, including Best of Show here. Spark Digital is an improvement, or not an improvement, an update to our Spark that we released last year, which has an XLR output. Spark Digital has our own proprietary plug that comes out of it and splits into either USB or it'll do the iPad 30-pin connector. So it comes with the same features as the other Spark, which are, the focus switch in the back. Comes with a stand and comes with a bag.
Right, and so I've been looking for a really good mic and solution to do recording GarageBand. You also have your Blue Fire software, which is available for free. People can use to record into. And I was telling you one of the challenges I always had was getting good levels once I get the recording, going into GarageBand. And this will solve that for me, right?
Absolutely. There's a knob that we have on there. It's the headphone control volume. If you push it once, it turns into the mute. But if you hold it for 3 seconds and let it go, it turns into a gain control. And you even have 4 little LED lights that tell you roughly where you're at.
Right, so I can actually set my gain on it, which is so important. I've tried other USB mics that don't have gain controls, and you just can't get the levels up. You end up having to adjust it afterwards, and it's a lot of work, so this is really going to solve that problem. Also, it's a full package. You've got the stand, you've got shock mount, all that stuff, right?
Absolutely. It comes with a new bag, which I think is really cool, and it comes with a really cool floating stand.
Right, and then on top of that, just the great blue design. It's gorgeous, so people are going to have to go check it out on your website. But you don't have just that product. You have a couple others. Let's talk about the update to Mikey, because we've talked about Mikey in the past, right? So explain what Mikey is and what's new about this version.
Great. Well, we've had 2 prior versions of Mikey. Plugs into your iPhone or your iPod through the analog connector. And this year, we're proud to announce the Mikey Digital. Apple updated the iPad and the new iPhone 4 and 4S with a digital connector, so our new Mikey will do that. Same great features, including gain control and a plug at the bottom of it so you can plug a guitar into it. But we have a new auto gain feature on it, which is the middle selector. And then we've got, as with the other versions, you have a low gain and a high gain setting in case you're at a concert or a loud environment.
Right, and you said also some clipping monitoring, right?
Oh, yeah, that's a brand new feature. The 3 lights that show which gain setting you're at will light up if you are clipping.
And then the last new one, which I think is design-wise, it's just a cool product, and it's called the Tiki. What is the Tiki?
Tiki is a very interesting product and a product that we're all very excited to hear about because we believe it's a revolutionary new thing. The processing for the Tiki is actually done inside the microphone, whereas a lot of times the microphone goes in the computer and then the computer does a lot of it. Well, in the Tiki, we've developed some technology with a company called iZotope that allows you to distinguish between, or allows the mic to distinguish between, human voice and other background noises. So we call it intelligent speech technology, and then there's an intelligent mute setting that will automatically mute and turn the mic light that's on the front of it orange if it detects that there's typing instead of talking. So if you're on a Skype call, you're talking, and then all of a sudden you start typing an email, your colleagues won't have to listen to you.
Right, so this is great if you're using Skype. It plugs into your Mac. I assume it's ideal for laptops because it's super small. Again, people are going to have to go look at the pictures, but I think the best way I could describe it is almost looks like a USB stick, but then with a nice, good-sized mic on it, right?
Absolutely. And for those of us that have tower computers, we include a 3-foot cable adapter, so you can still plug it into the tower and then move the mic to wherever you like.
Right, so you can get great audio on your Skype calls or for dictation or those sorts of applications, right?
Yes, and if you're in recording mode, of course, since we're a music company, there will be a button on the side of it that will take it out of the intelligent speech technology that we have.
So that's amazing. So I could use this to take my MacBook with me and record my garage session or something like that.
Absolutely.
Oh, awesome. Well, it's always fun to come see what you guys are up to. You're always kind of pushing the envelope in the audio technology and leader in that area. And Ben, thanks for chatting with us again.
Hey, thank you, Adam.
All right. I already mentioned that I like coming to Macworld because you find a bunch of really creative, unique products. I mean, I think a lot of the products are like a lot of the users. And I'm over at the Nomad Brush booth now with Don Lee, and he invented a really unique stylus, what, about a year ago?
It's about a year ago in February.
Yeah, and it's called the Nomad, I'll let you tell it, Nomad Brush?
It's a Nomad Brush. We offer a Nomad Compose, which is our dual-tip brush. It offers a brush tip on one end and a stylus tip on the other. And we also have the Nomad Play, specifically for kids' hands, and it's scaled and form factor for kids to go at the iPad with their artistic talents.
Yeah, and so what drew me over was this is a brush. It looks like a paintbrush. It's got, I think, some sort of capacitive material on the end.
It's got a mixture of synthetic and natural fibers. The synthetic fibers are conductive, so that's what really engages the iPad's touchscreen.
And what I really liked about it, you let me play with it a little bit, and you've got iPad set up with the various painting applications. A couple things that were really unique right off the bat beyond just the brush tip. The feel of the brush tip I thought was very unique, and also sort of just how it felt in your hand, the length of it. So can you talk about some of those features compared to other styluses?
Sure. As you know, artists are pretty particular about their tools, you know, and I think, you know, an artist and how they engage the canvas, it really affects what they create. So we wanted to make sure that A, that the The brush was very responsive. It had a really nice weight and feel to it. The lengths of the handle were nice, so you can really look at your canvas and paint. So all those things did factor into the design of the brush.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I've used a lot of other styluses, and most of them have that rubber tip. So a challenge I always thought that I had was, one, trying to kind of see the detail, because those rubber tips kind of cover up a lot of what you're working on. And the other is just, a lot of them you have to apply pressure. What really stood out to me with yours is that you don't really have to apply much pressure, or any pressure, really.
That's right. So our glide bevel tip, which is our version of a sort of a hard tip stylus, really has a very short bristles, and that really translates into a glide and frictionless painting for very little detail work and for like stylus work that you're talking about, yeah.
And I probably should point out, I mean, there is a technical limitation on the iPad in terms of what it can draw, in terms of what it can recognize as a touch on the screen. So you're not going to get a brush stroke textured effect by the brush, but you can get that in the software, right?
That's correct. Yeah. The iPad is not pressure sensitive, but all of that can be controlled within the app. So, you know, there's just a little bit of a learning curve, but I think you can get some pretty painterly effects with each of the individual apps.
Well, yeah, and especially, you know, this is about having a tool that really feels like the natural tool you're used to using in an analog world, and now you've applied it to a digital world, and it comes off really well. It's really surprising. You think at first that it's not going to really work, and then I tried it out, and I've talked to a couple of people who told me, you got to go check this out because it's really, really unique. So great, great product.
Thank you.
And so if people want to get more information, they want to find out about it, where can they go? And also, what's pricing on the different models?
Yes, so we can order this online at our website, nomadbrush.com. And the Nomad Compose, the dual tip, is $39 retail, and the Nomad Play is $18.
Right. And I also should mention that the tips do come off, and there's some future plans?
Yes. The Compose is interchangeable, and we will be, in the future, offering different tips, different styles of paintbrush ends. Some will be stiffer, some will be longer. So, yeah, it'll in the end be a sort of a toolbox or a tool chest for artists.
That's very, very cool. Well, thank you, Don, so much for chatting with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. So I swung by the Omni booth to talk to Ken Casey. You were actually specifically asked for from the listeners. I asked, you know, who do you want me to make sure I talk to at Macworld? And Omni's always on the top of that list. And so you have an exciting new announcement, I think, because you've been on this quest to take your applications and bring them to the iPad, and you kind of had one more to go, and that's about done, right?
Yeah, that's right. We started 2 years ago here at the show. We had just learned about the iPad, and we said we were going to bring all five of our productivity apps to the iPad, and people looked at us like we were crazy. But we shipped the fourth one this last year, and now we're just here at the show giving people a preview of the last one, OmniPlan.
Yeah, so can you talk a little bit about what OmniPlan on the iPad is going to look like and how it's maybe a little bit different than what people are used to with the desktop version?
Sure. Well, I suppose one of the first things that that people will notice when they look at OmniPlan on the iPad is it's centered around the timeline view more than around the outline. That you're looking at your live sort of schedule of your tasks, and they're organized in there as, you know, what we call a Gantt chart. But the focus is much more visual, and you can quickly zoom in and out on different parts of the task, and you edit the stuff live just by touching the Gantt chart and dragging things around.
Yeah, so can you talk maybe a little bit more about some of the unique controls that are in there? Because you were showing me the demo, and that it's really amazing how you've really taken advantage of the touch interface and added some really, I think, unique controls and unique ways of getting your different views and things like that.
So as you zoom in on the Gantt chart, you start to see more and more detail about each of the tasks. It starts to add these little heads-up controls around the tasks that show, give you traction bars that you can touch with your finger and drag out to say, this task is going to take longer. It needs to start earlier or later. You know, move it around that way, drag around the completion. You can tap on it again to get a different set of controls that lets you update the dependencies. You know, that you can't start that task until you finish this other one, and so on. And you can also, you know, in some ways, some of these are actually not that new to the iPad, because we did have controls like this on the Mac in the Gantt chart as well. But they're a little more discoverable because it touches your interface on the iPad, and you're just working with that. You can also, you know, just pinch on the timeline to change your view from looking at days to looking at weeks or months. You can zoom in and out on the whole thing, so you can zoom out to see the whole project quickly and back in, just like you would in Safari with a web page on your iPhone.
Yeah, it's great you bring up the discoverability. You're also showing me some of the cool features about when you start having conflicts and you need to push things around. There's some tools for sorting that stuff out too. Almost like, you know, prompting or wizards are helping you, you know, make sure that your stuff stays on track, right?
Yeah, absolutely. If you, for example, say that this task can't start until another task completes, and then you say that it's going to take 2 weeks to finish, and it will be due on a particular date, and now the first task slips. Let's say the tasks are, let's make this very concrete, programming the user interface for OmniPlan and then writing the documentation. The documentation to write it maybe is going to take 4 weeks, and we want to finish the whole thing this quarter. And we discover that writing the user interface code itself has slipped to the last week of the quarter. Well, of course, you're going to have a conflict there. You're missing your deadline. OmniPlan realizes that in the real world, your plans do miss your deadlines. And so you have to then decide how you want to resolve that. Do you want to change your deadline? And that's one of the options, and it'll prompt you through that, and you can just tap a link to automatically change it over. Or you can break the dependency and say, oh, wait, right, we're going to start the documentation earlier after all. Even though the user interface isn't frozen yet, we'll at least start working on the basic outline of how you use it and the stuff that we know is there.
Yeah, so that's really great. And I guess the other thing people are really going to wonder about is syncing between the desktop and the iPad version. How do you guys handle that?
Right, so OmniPlan, one of the reasons that we hadn't started OmniPlan for the iPad sooner was we were busy writing OmniPlan 2 for the desktop, which added syncing between Macintoshes, which is where it runs. And so OmniPlan for the iPad just fits right into that same syncing model. You sync up to the cloud, whatever you've changed, and other people will see what you've changed. They can review those changes, accept them or reject them, in which they go back and get undone. And you can see them and do your changes and back and forth. So all of the syncing happens through the cloud in our OmniSync server, or you can set up your own web dev server if you need to host your own data because it's sensitive and you don't want it on somebody else's server.
Well, very, very cool. What's pricing and availability on OmniPlan if you have that yet?
We haven't announced either of those yet. Okay. We, looking at where it is now and, just as a guess, not a commitment, we think that OmniPlan looks now about where Omni Outliner looked when we were at the show last year. So I think it's going to ship in the first half of this year.
Okay. Well, we won't hold you to it. And I kind of put you on the spot with that one. So soon, let's just say soon, as soon as you possibly can, I'm sure. So let's talk about, there are some other changes across the iPad apps too. You were showing me some things. Looks like there's some new icons and maybe a new document manager.
Yeah, well, when we worked on the icons for all this in the first place, we had sort of done them independently as we were in a big hurry, and we hadn't necessarily thought through what were the icons going to be like for all of our iPad apps by the time we got to the end. And they started getting more and more refined as we did. The first two, we're proud of all of them, of course. We wouldn't have shipped them otherwise, but they looked like they came from different artist hands, even though, in fact, it was all the same artistic team all along. And so we just, earlier this week, I think I tweeted a picture of, first public picture of the new icons. And we're really proud of how they look and how they now look like they all fit together from the same suite of applications.
Yeah, they're absolutely gorgeous. And then there's also kind of a new document manager, right, across all the apps.
Yeah, so one of the things we've been working on a lot over the last 6 months has been adding document syncing to our iPad apps, because it's great that you can take your outlines and your diagrams on the go with you using our tools, but then you're not always sure, oh, where did I edit this last and everything else. So we realized we wanted to do document syncing. And as we started getting into that, we realized, well, that before you can sync a lot of documents, you need a better interface for browsing them. Right now, you can sort of, in the current shipping apps in the App Store, you're looking at one in the file picker, you're looking at one at a time, and you're kind of swiping through it in this carousel view. And so we have switched over now to a view where you can see about 30 documents on the screen at a time and quickly scroll through them all.
Yeah, it's really great. The icons are gorgeous. I'm excited about the new views. They're not out yet, but soon?
But soon, yes. Sometime in the next few weeks, we hope to be submitting to the App Store, and then, of course, goes through the review process. And so hopefully in the next month or so, we'll see them.
And then the last thing a lot of people are wondering about, and I know I asked you about this a little bit earlier, iCloud. A lot of people are kind of excited about iCloud. What's the status of the iCloud stuff?
Well, we're very excited about iCloud. It solves a lot of problems, we think, for people in terms of that the exact thing I was mentioning, document syncing. So we wanted to lay the groundwork first with the file browser, but then we hope to follow it up very quickly with iCloud updates that let you sync all of your Omni Outliner, Omni Graffle, and Omni Graph Sketcher documents between your Mac and between all of your devices.
So the last thing I just want to ask you about, you know, very ambitious project. You mentioned 2 years ago, you know, committing, and everybody kind of thought you were crazy. Now you're at the tail end of it. We're kind of on the other side of it. You know, just your thoughts on kind of what the experience was like, maybe some of the challenges, and how you feel now having done it.
Now having done it, I you know, here I'm looking ahead at how long it will take to finish OmniPlan, and thinking back 2 years ago to how Macworld was about the same time of year, and at that time we had already learned that the iPad would be shipping in 8 weeks, and how in the world did we think we could get 2S in those first 8 weeks? It was great. But somehow we managed to pull that off and keep our sanity. good software takes a lot of time. You know, since then, we have done updates to a number of those apps. And a lot of the things that we thought we would do 2 years ago when we were going into this about how we thought these iPad apps would work, you know, has shifted over time. We quickly learned, for example, that we had thought maybe now on the iPad there's more room for more fingers to be involved in gestures. So you're going to see more three-finger gestures or four-finger gestures, or maybe you're holding fingers from both hands and you're pulling apart or something with two fingers on each or something, and that would mean I want to clone an object or something, right? All of these sorts of gestures that we had. And so we were kind of coming up with this gestural language for working with a touch device. And then as we got into the development, we realized that was just going to be completely impenetrable to people, right? If you sat down at this thing, you didn't want to spend half an hour learning how to use, learning a whole new gestural language before you could just sit down and start working with the software. And so, you know, especially if you're in a business meeting or something, you want to be able to just hand this across the table and have it be completely intuitive. So we threw all that out and we started again from scratch. Okay, we have to be able to do everything with one finger, with the basic gestures that Apple already has taught people on the iPhone. So, you know, there we do allow two fingers, the two-finger pinch, for example. But generally, we try to do everything with one finger, and then it's just contextual and modal. So modal has been kind of a bad word in our Macintosh design, because modal has often meant you're stuck in a mode. And so we had always on the Macintosh tried to design things to be mode-less, so no matter where you were, you could always do this other thing, and you didn't have to somehow get out of that mode and go get into this other mode before you could do it. But if you're going to work with just one finger all the time, you really have to be switching between these modes. And it has to be easy to get out, so you just tap away to get out. But there are these little micro-modes, and when we got to thinking about it, we realized the iPhone already had these micro-modes, right? Like if you tap on some text, you tap on it again. Now suddenly you get a little prompt that says, do you want to select? You can drag the stuff around, so you're in your selection mode. You finish that, and now you're in another mode where you get a little menu saying, do you want to copy or paste the stuff? So we did the same thing with our software, where you will tap on a shape, and now you'll get a little menu that says, do you want to copy the shape? Do you want to lock it, move it up or down in the layer list? And we also added things like drawing modes versus manipulating the existing objects mode and so on.
Well, you guys have done an amazing job, and you know, it makes sense that all those things came about because you see it in the end product. And I was saying to you earlier, you know, people should be really kind of looking at what you've done in terms of touch and customizing interfaces, because not everybody does that, and you guys have really thought it out and done it right, and you did that on the desktop, so it makes sense that that happened when you converted over to iPad. But we love the products. Everybody should check it out. If they want to get more information on the whole lineup of products, and they're all great, I wish we could cover all of them, but we'd be here for hours. Where should they go and what should they do?
Well, of course, to our website, omnigroup.com.
Oh, and then if people want to see those new icons on your Twitter feed, maybe give your Twitter handle so in case they don't have it.
My Twitter handle is KCase, my first initial, K, followed by my last name, Case, C-A-S-E.
Yeah, go check it out. They're gorgeous. All right. Thank you, Ken, so much for your time.
Thank you, Adam.
So there you go. That's my coverage of Macworld iWorld 2012. Great conference, as I was saying earlier. And hopefully you can make it out for 2013. I'd love to see you there. I'm looking very much forward to it and seeing where this whole thing goes. That's going to do it for the show for today. But before I leave you, let me recognize a couple of our supporters, and that's our sponsors. Phoronix, makers of Deep Freeze. You can check out their software and get more information, details, and trials over at Phoronix.com. Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook, awesome application for taking notes and getting organized. You can check out their stuff as well as get a trial over at CircusPonies.com. And Smile, check out Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label. Check out PDF Pen for the iPad. You heard them interviewed in the last episode of the MacCast. Great product and brand new. Check it out and get more information and details over at SmileSoftware.com. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the show. Big thank you to you for being a member of the MacCast community and listening to the podcast, staying subscribed. If you have any feedback for me, anything you'd like to comment on, maybe you're at Macworld and you saw something cool that I didn't see, send me an email, send me an audio comment, or even if you just have a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode, you can send your emails to maccast@gmail.com. Or you can call in on the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. You can leave voicemail there. You can also leave voicemail on Skype. My Skype address is the MacCast. And if you need show notes, links to anything that you heard about on this episode, the last episode, or any other episode of the MacCast, you can find those in the show post at maccast.com. While you're there, be sure to check out the forum. And also, if you'd like to follow me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/maccast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page. That's at facebook.com/themaccast. That'll do it. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.